Welcome to the Barth Calderon Wealth Protector Podcast. Our founder, Harry Barth, and his son, Brad, are top speakers on asset protection and estate planning to many incredible groups across the country, including the Women Presidents Organization, Vistage, the Young Presidents Organization, the California Apartment Association, and many more. And now, here is your host, Paul Hitchcock.
Hi, everyone. This is Paul Hitchcock with the estate and asset protection planning firm Barth Calderon. And thanks for jumping on Wealth Protector TV, or you might be listening to this on Wealth Protector Radio. Very fired up today to have with me my friend and colleague, Anthony Gerasi. Can you hear me okay, Anthony?
I hear you perfectly. Thanks, Paul.
Fantastic.
So glad to be here.
Yeah, no, thanks. And I know you have a lot going on and very busy, so thanks a lot. And for those of you listening, as you know, we're a very busy firm here at Barth Calderon. We're an asset protection estate planning firm. We have a lot of great alliance firms we work with, and Anthony is the founder of his firm, and we do some great things together. So I just want to start by asking you, Anthony, I know I've got a, we're talking offline, there's a couple of exciting things I want to ask you about, but tell, for those people listening, tell us kind of what your firm does and what are the issues you're dealing with right now?
Absolutely. So our firm is probably well known for, and really what our core focus is helping non-conventional lenders. And what we do is we help hard money lenders, private lenders, we connect them to people they need to know. And really our goal is just to be the premier one-stop shop for private money lenders worldwide. And within that, we have a few different divisions. Our law firm, of course, always going to be our core business. We have a media division, and that focuses on our conference line, and a consulting division as well that really helps people to grow and comes out with different data. Like we just released our benchmarking survey.
So obviously you're the founder of the firm. So how did that happen? I mean, is this something you were always getting into, and is why hard money lenders? Why that niche?
Sure. No, everybody seems to have these whole things about how they've dreamt about it for what have you. But I've always loved real estate. I've loved mortgages, but I kind of fell into it. I started a small firm and worked there a couple of years, and he basically retired out of the business. So there was a few things I wanted to do, and I want to continue on. I made great relationships at the time. And so I started it with my partner, Christina, in 2007, and we rapidly grew from there.
Okay. Partner Christina?
Yep.
She's a lifelong partner for you now, huh?
You got it. Partner and wife.
No, I knew that, but I think that's an important point. I think it's great that you guys work together. And so hard money lenders, like, on LinkedIn, all of us, listening are on LinkedIn, and I see a ton of hard money lenders on LinkedIn, really great people doing great things. Mm-hmm. What would you be doing for a hard money lender? Why would they be calling your firm? Run me through that a little bit.
Sure. On our legal side in particular, they'll be looking for us for compliance advice. It's a very tricky area of law. There's at least 5 different federal statutes, probably now 20 different state statutes that people have to comply with. Something very simple, for instance, in the state of California, there's 10% usury. If you don't have an exemption, your loan is void. So there's a lot of people who call us about stuff like that as far as, hey, how do we comply with the usury law to make sure we have everything up and up and what have you? We have a full service litigation department that defends a lot of lenders. Unfortunately, in the cost of doing business, they get sued from time to time. Right. And then we have this full service securities department. And what they do is they create mortgage pools and mortgage funds for more hard money lenders, private money lenders, or non-conventional lenders to get investors out there to invest in their funds as well. And that's just on our – also on the media side, we put together, I would think, one of the most premier conference lines in the space. Next conference, for instance, is going to be our Captivate conference in August. It'll draw over 300 attendees. And really, it's just a money show. It's pure goal is to network and link up our hard money lenders, our private money lenders, and non-conventional lenders with our investors and help them make a deal, so to speak. Yeah, investors, this is a good portion for them to invest their time and money into.
No, and that's awesome. You mentioned the conferences. Obviously, you know, our firm, as an alliance partner of yours, we were at the conference. We, our founder, Harry Barr, spoke at the conference, and, you know, the feedback was incredible on the people there, the networking, the education you provide. And, so, I mean, have you been doing that for a long time, those conferences?
Yeah, we launched our first one in 2016. So not a long time, probably about 2 years now. But great traction. You know, our first conference even garnered 160 attendees, and it's just been gaining traction ever since. And I think it's fulfilling a need within the community of networking, as well as good content, hopefully. But I think really the thing is building that community of investors, the community of lenders, and bringing them together to work together.
Well, I got to tell you, I've seen some of the media postings of the conference after parties on LinkedIn. It looks like things got kind of a little bit fun and crazy there.
Always, always. You know, it's work hard, play hard mentality, right?
So. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I love it. I love it. And the next one is in Vegas?
Next one's in Vegas. Yeah, it'll be August 26th through the 28th in Vegas.
Who's going to be speaking at that one?
So I generally do a morning keynote, and then we will have another keynote that'll discuss the conference, generally along the lines of raising capital. I know Harry's going to be there. Harry's going to be speaking about asset protection as well, Harry Barth with Barth Calderon.
Yeah.
And then also we've got a line of speakers that will be discussing how family offices, for instance, will take a look at investors, take a look at investments within the lending community. We'll have bring in other investors to network and grow. And really we're going to have seven speakers who are there to discuss and pitch their mortgage pool, mortgage fund, or any type of offering for our 100 investors to review and decide whether they want to be part of it or not.
Nice, nice. Is that hard money lenders, is that an industry that's growing? And I mean, are there more and more of those folks out there? And what do you see there?
Absolutely. Yeah, we probably get about 3 new clients a week, just people entering the space and trying to learn. Like I said, one of the things we've really been doing is hard money lending or private money lending is really an opaque industry. It's very hard to gauge. And so one of the things we're doing as thought leaders in the industry is trying to put together, well, how big is the industry anyway? And we figured out the between great responses from a lot of our private lenders that worldwide and really within the States, we benchmarked the U.S. market between $768 billion and $1.5 trillion.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, a lot bigger than what most people think. It's really sophisticated and grown from the subprime market, even back in the subprime heydays of $6 trillion, if you will, annually. Hard money lending is a quarter of that without, if you will, Wall Street's backing.
Interesting. Now, I've got to ask you about a book. You've got a book out, and I've had a chance to read through a little bit of it. And so far, so good on my end. But what's the book all about, and why did you write the book? What went into it?
Absolutely. So a lot of needs of our lending clients is really getting capital into the space. That's, of course, the goal of Captivate and why we created that conference. But another thing is we thought about what else can we do to help our clients and really wanted to introduce more and more people into the space. You know, for a variety of reasons. One, it'll help lenders get more investors in the door. But also, I've seen in the news how you've got all these investors that are sitting on savings accounts. You know, they're earning 1% or something, you know, something right. like that, and really losing money to inflation. So I really thought if I wrote a book and taught people this space and really educate them, one, of course, nothing else, knowledge is power. But two, they'll find more and more interest in the space and learn and then invest in these loans. For their retirement, as well as, you know, adding value to the lenders as well. So, you know, our core niche is building this community is just to be that hub to connect everybody together. So that was the real impetus of it. And it's entitled Earning Money While You Sleep. So,
Earning Money While You Sleep. Yeah, you know,
you got it.
And I'm going to put a link down below for anybody that wants to check that out, see where that book is. I think it's up on Amazon, right?
It's on Amazon. Yeah. On May 17th, it was released as a number one new release for real estate as well as real estate investing.
Oh, awesome. Fantastic. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Congratulations to you. And what do you see as some of the challenges you're facing going forward? I mean, obviously your business is growing and what are you focused on as a leader of the business? Because a lot of people that listen to this are business owners. So what are you dealing with challenge-wise and what do you see on the horizon?
Yeah, so exactly that. What is next, right? And right. So our goal as part of the thought leader and leader in the space is what can we predict for our clients and advise them both legally as well as business-wise in the space? So I think, and I don't think it's well argued at this point, it, all things being equal, people much smarter than myself are seeing a recession in 2019-2020. I have to agree.
2020?
You got it. 2019 or 2020. Probably, I would say probably middle of 2020, the way things are going right now.
So why do you say that? Soon. Why do you say that? It's because things are, is it a bubble in your opinion? Or why are you saying 2020?
2020, a lot of reasons. Interest rates are rising and rising pretty quickly. One of the charts we have is how the Wall Street prime rate has gone from, you know, historic lows of 3% all the way from 2007, 2015, but now it's 4.75. You have federal funds rate down to 0% basically for the last, from 2007, 2015. And then you're seeing basically 25 bips every quarter as the feds keep on raising it. I believe the federal funds rate right now is around 1.25. I'd have to double check that off the top of my head, but we're seeing steady increases. And what that means is the buying power, as that gets built into mortgages, right? And federal funds rate is how banks lend to each other. And as that gets built into mortgages, your buying power lessens. So there's going to be a correction of the housing market regardless, just because of higher interest rates. The stock market itself is something I don't understand, but as I said, brighter minds than myself, so Ray Dalio and Steve Guggenheim, you know, the two huge billion-dollar offices, they both come out predicting a recession in 2020 as well.
So if you say a recession in real estate because rates are going up, so, I mean, rates, you know, couldn't stay at zero forever. They're going up, you know, like you said, 25 bips. And so is when you're talking about the recession in real estate, you mean just because – less people are going to be buying houses because rates are going to be higher or less refis, as opposed to like this wholesale debacle that we saw, you know, a few years back?
Yeah, I don't think we see anything like 2007. And maybe recession is a strong word, maybe a correction of 10 or 15%. As a result, I think that's natural. If you look at real estate cyclically or historically, it's all cyclical. Last recession before 2005 was 94. Before that was 87. So every 5 to 7 and some odd years, there's always a correction in real estate as it gets higher and becomes overpriced compared to income. Because if you can't afford a house, the linchpin of any housing market really is that new home buyer. Because, right, you know, you and I, we could buy a home. Well, we're going to sell our house and go buy a new home, maybe bigger, brighter, whatever that may be. But we've got to have that buyer. And at some point, someone may flip into our house. At some point, there's that entry-level house, so to speak. Not based on price, but based on, at some point, that new home buyer has to buy that house, whether it's new construction or your old house. And if they can't afford it, the price has to go down.
Right.
Or you stay in your house. So right, there's definitely going to be construction lessening over time, but I still would see a 10 or 15% correction in the real estate market.
Interesting. Interesting. And of course, there's a whole nother discussion about how to insulate yourself from that, you know, in different areas, diversification.
For sure.
And certainly our firm gets involved in that because in these market downturns or just in general in life, things are twisting and turning, that the asset protection planning is about getting buttoned up and just guarding your business, your personal assets from kind of the you know, twists and turns of life. So certainly market downturns, we're all over that.
Absolutely. And yeah, you know, it's not doom and gloom scenario I'm painting in my mind anyway. It's just natural historic cyclicalness of real estate. And at least in investing in what we're talking about with these loans, investors will be fine. There's generally plenty of loan to value in the house. There's generally an equity cushion that they shouldn't have to worry about it.
So I've got to ask you as we hit the wall here in our time frame is, I always ask this with leaders, and I know you know, I've gotten to know you pretty well. You've got a lot going on, very busy, very successful. How do you balance the million-dollar question? How do you balance work and personal life? Do you have a good balance going? How do you do that?
I tried. I really tried. You trying to get that work-life balance thing? I'm unsuccessful at it, and so I've just thrown that away. I don't know what work-life balance is. What I do try, though, is work-life impact. And what I mean by that is if I'm only home for 30 minutes, well, that means I put the phone away, I put the computer away, you can't reach me, and I'm there talking to my kids or reading a book or being with my family. You know, it's not I don't think quantity of time, because you'll see people, you know, they're still on their phones or talking to somebody.
So true.
Multitasking.
So true.
So instead of trying to work-life balance, I'm going to work when I need to work, but when I'm home, I'm going to turn off the technology and I'm going to be with my family. That's the thing I got.
You know, that's great insight because you probably see the same thing. You go to the park, I have a lot of kids, you have kids. You go to the park with your kid and there'll be a dad there or a mom and they say, okay, I'm out with my kid, but they're like this on the phone and you know, the kid's off doing something else. It's like, are you really spending time with your kid? It's unbelievable.
No, no, not at all. Sure, honey. Yeah, whatever you want. Go play in traffic. Right? I mean, and that's not, you know, look, it's not a dig on anybody at all. We all have the pressures, right? I don't think our parents had the pressures we do of conforming. Like, you couldn't reach them past 6 o'clock unless you knew their home phone number.
That's exactly true. I remember, you know, I grew up one of four boys, and my, you know, mom was fortunate enough to stay home and raise the kids. My dad worked. And I always asked my mom, you know, how often did you talk to dad at work? And she's like, what are you talking about? I talked to him when he got home. He was, you know, he was at work and unreachable. It's just different now, different.
Expectations have changed, right? I mean, we no longer, you know, we expect to reach certain people after 6 p.m. Why? Because we know it's capable, right? We know you're able to answer that phone at 6.
Right, right.
And you know, that's to me, that's where the balance is, if there's balance to be found of, in spite of expectations, just shut off the phone and be with the family for a couple of hours. So for my normal schedule is I'll get up at 5:30, I'll work out or what have you, and I'll go to work, I'll come home around 6, and between 6 and 8, unless it's something completely urgent, I leave my phone upstairs and I play with the kids or, you know, spend time with the family for a couple of hours before the kids go to bed.
And it's hilarious because as we're talking right now, my wife just texted me, and so I'm going to have to call her back after we're finished.
Exactly. Right. Instantaneous communication anymore.
Oh, yeah. And what was one other thing I was going to ask you is, you're doing something right because, like Harry Barth, our founder, his wife, Tess, works here at the firm. They come in together. They leave together. It's great. They've been doing that for many years. And you've got the secret sauce too, working with your wife. That must help the situation. That sounds great.
And she understands the pressures, right? And there's no, hey, what are you doing? Well, you know what I'm doing. You have access to my calendar and you work, you know, five doors down from me. So, you know what's going on in general, at least. I mean, we do different things for sure for the firm, but in general, she knows the pressures. And if it's, hey, I got to go on this trip, it's not why. It's okay. So we're very supportive of each other for sure.
Yeah. And she's working there too. And she's got a full place. She's got her own pressure. So you guys are in it together.
Absolutely. You got it.
Yeah. Well, Anthony, I mean, you and I could go on forever talking about life.
Absolutely.
I want to say thanks so much for jumping on. Thanks everybody for listening and we'll see you next time.
Wow. My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate being here.
Yeah.